This is a production of Cornell University.
EA meeting, October 21st, 2009.
All right, and call this meeting to order. This is the employee assembly meeting for Wednesday, October 21st, 2009, at 12:20 p.m. We've been relocated to B12. And I will start with the roll call of members. David Brooks?
Here.
Tempa Dungtow?
Here.
Tanya Grove?
Here.
Linda Krollhow? Ned LaSalle?
Here.
Leon Lawrence?
Present.
Alan Mittman?
Here.
Leslie Morris?
Here.
Gemma Osborne is not able to make it today. Tim Ostrander?
Here.
Celie Phillips?
Here.
Jason Seymour? Present. Gary Stewart?
Here.
Almost a complete full house with our new fully staffed employee assembly board for the first time in many, many, many years from what I hear. And let's see, we've got Amy. Are there any late additions to the agenda?
Yes.
Okay. Leon?
I'd like to add a progress update on President's suggestion box cost saving ideas.
Okay.
However you want to word it.
Okay. We'll add that under new business. Are there any others? Okay. So we will move on to our business of the day, which is a presentation on the Middle States Accreditation from Susan Murphy and Paul Streeter. So welcome.
And we're going to introduce the chair of the accreditation process, Dean Alan Matthews. He and Ken Hubler are co-chairing, who will make the presentation. Paul and I are here to help.
All right.
And,
welcome.
So every 10 years, the university is required. It's voluntarily, but it's essentially required, and I'll sit my mind a second, that we go through an accreditation process, and we are accredited by the Middle States Commission on Higher Education. There's no easy way to pronounce that through acronyms other than MUSHA, so I'm going to say Middle States. So you can go to the first slide. So we are accredited through the Middle States, and we're set to be renewed in spring 2011. And so you need to work back at least 2 years to prepare for an accreditation of this magnitude. And why I said it was voluntary, but not really, is that accreditation by some groups is required to have access to federal funds, which includes student financial aid. So we essentially must be accredited. One distinction, many programs at Cornell have independent accreditations based on their own content area. So, for example, engineering has their own accreditation processes. In human ecology, we have an interior design program and a health administration program that have other accrediting bodies that come and do that accreditation. And this is independent of that. Next slide. So every 10 years, we're expected to do this. And what does doing this mean? It means that we must put together a self-study report that encompasses what we are as a university, and it includes the medical college as well, and how we address 14 standards of excellence that Middle States dictates are necessary for accreditation. So we put together this self-study report, a site visit by an external review team, read the report, visit campus, interview lots and lots of people, employees, students, faculty, etc. Cornell must, as I said, demonstrate these 14 standards, and they, after their site visit, will recommend action to Middle States, and we hope and presume that we will have an accreditation agreement that allows for a five-year midterm return after the report, which is a typical process where they'll credit you for another 10 years, but they do a five-year follow-up to make sure that the recommendations that you put forth in your self-study are being met, and the things that you're claiming you'll do are making progress. Okay? Next slide. So how do you put together a self-study that summarizes how Cornell meets 14 standards of excellence? And these standards in general are widespread, vague standards about education, governance, etc. So we put together a steering committee with Paul Streeta and Susan Murphy are members of that steering committee. I'll get to composition of the committees in a little bit. And then we broke up the steering committee, organized six topical working groups to deal with these 14 standards. We expect about a 200-page narrative, the self-study, and the title of the self-study will be words that you're very familiar with, I'm sure. Any person, any study, and the sort of challenges and advantages of doing that within one university. The report to the self-study report is due in early 2011. So here's the steering committee. It's a phenomenally strong group, and it's a pleasure really working with this group of people. So there it is. It includes all those people and then chairs of the six working groups that we've put together. So again, the steering committee are these people and then the leaders of each of the content working groups. And so next slide. So here are the six working groups. So the steering committee is the group and then the leaders of these. And these are the themes that we have to address. So the 14 standards are broken into issues dealing with institutional stewardship, integrity, governance, and administration, the faculty, student admissions and support services, educational offerings, and assessment of student learning. You could group these however you want. This was our sort of hybrid model. Instead of doing it standard by standard, we did it by theme and grouped standards together to evaluate and put together our self-study. Next slide. So I'll go through the working groups. The institutional stewardship working group are dealing with four standards, 1, 2, 3, and 7, as dictated in their Standards of Excellence book. And those are mission, goals, objectives, planning, resource allocation, and institutional renewal. We have a lot to say on institutional renewal, as you well know. Institutional resources and assessment. Kathy Rasmussen is leading that working group, and there are the members of that working group set up. Next slide. Leadership, so integrity, governance, and administration. So those deal with three standards, leadership and governance, administration and integrity. Charlie Walcott is leading that group, and the members of his working group are there. Next slide. Student admissions and student support services is those are the two standards dealing being dealt with by this working group. This is chaired by Craig Adler, and you can see that working group composition. And the next working group is the faculty. Amy from Theater, Film, and Dance is leading that. And there are the members of those of that working group. And we have all this up, so you know what we can. This will be on our website, so you can get all these names if you have any interest in following. So you don't need to pay too much attention, other than the broad scope of involvement. And the main message you should take from this is how expansive, how many people are involved in just this process. Next. The Educational Offerings Working Group deals with Standards 11, 12, and 13. Those deal with offerings at general education-related educational activities. The chair of that group, but actually she was the chair prior to becoming the vice provost, so it was fortunate that she was on the steering committee. Laura Brown, and there are the members of that working group. And finally, Assessment of Student Learning, David Greaves is the chair of this, and you can see this is a large, large working group. And the reason this is a large working group is this standard is relatively new to Middle States in terms of previous accreditation did not focus very much on assessing student learning as a separate, very visible expectation of Middle States. Since the last one, this has become a primary focus, and so we have a lot of thought and action going into figuring out how we actually assess what students learn at Cornell University. Next. So here's the timeline. We've been at work for quite a while already. So to even get to this point, we had to propose a self-study design. So this groupings of these clusters of standards into these working groups was proposed to Middle States. They sent us very complimentary language about the design of our self-study, the questions we're asking ourselves, and said that it should serve the basis of a very insightful self-evaluation. The working group reports are due to our steering committee in spring 2010. Then the steering committee takes these documents, puts together a draft of the self-study, which we hope to share with the campus in the fall of 2010. The final draft of the self-study must be submitted to Middle States in March 2011, we believe at the latest. And then the external evaluation team will visit campus in May 2011, followed by their recommendations about what their views are based on their visit and the written documents we provide. If you have any questions, Kent Clubble and I are the point people as co-chairs of the process. And there is a website, cornell.edu, Middle States, where you can find the previous results of our accreditation 10 years ago or 8 years ago, and the types of documents and things that are supporting some of what we're doing. So I'll put it up for questions.
It seems that there's no bond on there, and it's like after, you know, getting a degree from Cornell, it seems like alums would be one group that you would want to have some feedback from.
The trustees, who are often, not always, but are often alums, play an active role in this. I also don't know who, when they visit, if they're
They will probably have a meeting with some trustees. The what happened in the last stage, you know, was that the Committee on Academic Affairs developed a small task group, and I think Kent Fox is putting together a task force of the trustees that will be charged with reviewing the document and being informed by it. We also, as part of some of the assessment information, feedback that we get from our alumni surveys that we do, our postgraduate surveys that we do, will be part of the information that is present for them to take a look at.
And the other question I have regarding the various assemblies, whether it's the Faculty Senate mm-hmm. or GPSA, SA, or the EA, is there any role that you're looking for the assemblies to play?
Yes. So we have, as part of our proposed design, a communication strategy, essentially, and one is to go to each assembly and present this presentation, mm-hmm. and then as we develop the self-study, we will be sharing that with campus constituents to get broad feedback on the self-study document. So that's the primary role. The other role that could play, and it really depends on the evaluation team, is they get to determine who they want to talk to when they visit campus in some sense. So whether they want to broadly meet with staff through formal channels like assemblies, university assemblies, employee assemblies, right? How they manage that is sort of a negotiation to some degree between us and them, but they ultimately have the say of how they want to deal with their site visit. And so to some degree, that will be another way that you direct input to the people visiting.
My last question, does this also include Qatar?
Yes. It involves the medical college, certainly at Weill Medical, and it does involve all major aspects of the university. And so they will be part of how we describe Cornell. We do have David Hajar from Weill Medical is on the steering committee.
You might be interested to know that anytime we go into a program like Qatar, when we started that, we had to go through Middle States and have them accept that as part of our accreditation program. There's a substantive change, but every time we do expand some academic offering, there's some thresholds. Anything significant, and Qatar's not the only one. There's some other overseas programs, other things within the state, the Johnson Schools boardroom degree, the executive degree, the distance learning degree that they have. All that stuff, Middle States is providing governance for us throughout the course of the 10 years. Throughout, between these big decennial reviews, they're providing governance.
In many ways, our challenge is how do you describe an institution as complex as Cornell in 200 pages?
So, could you give us an idea of what the nature of the response is likely to be? I think this isn't like a pass-fail, you know, like, all right, you're not accredited, it must be that we looked at it, we have these, and I assume we expect recommendations. They're not going to say you're doing everything great, keep up the good work. There could be some critical analysis.
So where we expect the most, we're confident we're going to get accredited. Where we expect the most feedback and recommendation is around assessing student learning. And so we actually are anticipating that. And so Laura Brown has really taken a leadership role already as Vice Provost and as our, in a role on this committee, and sent representatives from every college together. We went as a group, mostly associate deans, but not all associate deans represented colleges, and went to Middle States Conference on what Middle States expectations are around how we assess student learning. And from that, we're developing a strategic plan that will start being implemented over the next year and a half to develop progress on how we assess student learning. We do a lot of it already, and we do a lot of it well already, but many of the ways we do it are what are called indirect measures of success. So we look at student placement and how well the alumni are doing.
That's right.
And those the alumni. But they are also interested in how do you measure that students are learning what you expect them to learn. And not use placement, but actually measure actual learning and thinking through those. We do that, but we don't do that in an organized fashion at the university. And so some of what Laura Brown is doing is trying to organize that process that will be driven many in a place like Cornell. The colleges have to play a major role in assessing what their learning goals are and how their curriculum meets those goals and to what extent they need to evaluate the learning that happens and evolve their curriculum in response. Mm-hmm. So a lot of that thinking will happen as the result of what we hope Laura does. So I think it actually be good for Cornell, not only for Middle States, but for us to be creative in thinking about how we measure student learning and how we react and evolve our curriculums to foster even better students.
That's interesting. So that's a new fact or a new...
This has been in the works for probably 7 to 8 years when the federal government was actually thinking of bypassing these accrediting groups and directly regulating how universities assess student outcomes. So the compromise in Congress is essentially requiring that these accrediting groups essentially deal with assessing students. So some of this has been in the works for a long time. I remember Biddy Martin 4 or 5 years ago starting to be concerned about us having a strategy for dealing with students.
And part of it is being explicit about what are the learning outcomes you want to have for your students. Not just assuming it's clear, but being explicit about that, and then being equally explicit about how do you measure that you know that happens. And it's mostly on the curricular side, but as we were talking this morning, it's also on outside the curriculum. So, you know, instead of us just talking about we have a goal of creating living learning environments for our students, and I can tell you, you know, how much money we spend and what time frame, whatever, the assessment of this would say, so what?
Yeah.
Okay, you've spent all that money, you've gotten the faculty involved, you're having students, what is the learning outcome as a result of your creating that kind of living learning environment as opposed to traditional residence halls or the Greek system or students living off campus? And most of our goals have been what I'll call input goals, not the learning outcome. So it's a real shift in your thinking.
It's a lot of fun to think about, actually.
Wow. I think it's worth thinking about, isn't it? Seems to me to be a fundamental aspect.
Will there be support from the university to help individual colleges reach their standards? I mean, for example, like I know there was concern about Rand Hall and AAP being handicap accessible. and I think that's part of them being reaccredited.
You know, a lot of the responsibility for how to deal with, once we assess student learning and figure out where we need to improve, will be left to the deliverers of the mission, which are the colleges. And so deans will have to, part of the value of having an external review team come is we're going to have to make some promises in this document and some recommendations based on our self-study. Where are we good? What are our strengths? What are our weaknesses? And if we have weaknesses, what are we doing to try to creatively improve? And we're going to put some things that, so it's actually very instructive to look at the last one where we made some great big promises. We want to create a living learning environment. That was said 10 years ago, and lo and behold, we have a whole new West Campus developed in that theme. And so having that written down, having that as an explicit statement, where the resources come is a constant, it competes with every other priority that we have, but certainly everybody at Cordell, all the deans recognize, at least the 7 undergraduate colleges, that undergraduate education is a lot of what we're in this for. And if we don't take this seriously and devote resources to making sure students learn what we expect them to and support that, then we don't deserve to have the reputation that we have.
Any other questions?
Thank you very much for
giving us this update on your progress. Good luck.
Okay, moving on to report from the employee elected trustee. Beth McKinney cannot make this meeting, and she said that she has nothing to report, but should hopefully have something next time because isn't it a big trustee weekend? Is it this weekend?
Council, council week.
Yep. So she'll probably have all sorts of interesting things to say from there. Okay, then moving on from report from the chair. I still need to have my little orientation meeting with our 3 new members, so I will be contacting you probably next week and try to find a date that we can all meet together somewhere on campus and just go over some of the logistical, operational issues of the employee assembly so that you feel you understand how the structure works and where to go if you have any questions. So, thanks to everybody who helped out with the president's address. It went over very nicely at the house.
Thank you,
Tanya.
I want to thank Tim and Leslie, who without which I would still be washing apples.
True.
It was a nice space. I think I'd love to entertain having it there again. And I think it went really well. So we got our big event out of the way now, and I'm hoping we can now gear up by. We'll have a staffing update from Tanya, and get our committees up and running, and start looking at some of the issues and things to review in our committees. So, we can continue to hear all the other updates from the university as we progress. But we'd like to get our committees.
Jason, I have a question. I was wondering if anyone had any feedback about the location. We were concerned initially that it was more out of the way or not what folks were used to. Did you hear anything?
I didn't hear any concern, and I think one of the things that I did see, and I don't know compared to other ones, but there were a lot of people who came up from like the Hilton Garden in offices down in the Commons. There were a lot of people getting off the bus and coming up, and I don't know if they would have come if they would have had to get off.
I didn't hear any either. I just wondered if anyone else had. I thought it went well, and I think an important piece of that was including the bus information, which was really terrific to have that included as part of the announcement. I thought that made it really easy for people to get there. So good job. Thank you.
All right. That's all that I have. The next thing we have is approval of our October 7th, 2009 minutes. We can just take a moment to review those. If you have any questions or amendments.
I have some questions.
Okay,
go ahead. I mean, maybe they want to look at it first. I don't know.
Yeah, let's just give a minute or so. Amendment. Under committee reports, section 7A, David Brooks said he had a meeting with Mary Opperman, Bain Consulting, and David Harris. Replaced he with the executive committee and invited EA members. And then the last he will have a final report. That he should be David Harris. I don't know if we can do friendly amendments here or any objections to those clerical. Okay. Leon?
A few things. One is like when we invite people to come, I think we should know who they are. So in the minutes where it has a name with a question mark,
I'm sorry.
I don't think there should be names with question marks.
I'm still short of one name, but.
Richard Moran. And if it's David Smith or is it somebody else? Because there's a question mark there.
Usually that was the case. We didn't know who was showing up for the United Way, so this was a little bit different.
But now it's passed. It's over. So we know who actually came. Also, I don't know in that same paragraph where it says David Smith question mark, if everybody knows what ESL is. Everybody does know around the table what that means?
Okay.
And then on page 3 or 4, number 3, business of the day continued, where it says Deputy Provost David Harris. It reads as if he may not have been here. To me, like that wording was a little odd. It says he would like to speak to us, but he actually spoke to us. You know what I'm saying?
Oh. Should we change would like to speak to
he
address
spoke about?
Okay.
And also where it says D. Harris would like to ask 3 questions to explain. Once again, he did that.
Okay.
So it's not that he would like to. He actually did.
D. Harris asked 3 questions.
Exactly.
Okay. You got that, Amy?
Yeah.
Okay.
That's it.
Any objections to the informal, friendly amendments to the words on paper?
Do you want to clarify if you have someone coming and you don't know? I want a clarification. If someone is coming and you don't know who's coming, like if you don't know if there's added people, we can just add that after the meeting. Is that what we're saying? Right. That's what you were suggesting.
Well, no, I'm saying the meeting happened, so we know who
so
we here.
That's what I'm saying. I just want to clarify. So you're saying then just add that, make sure to add that into the meeting minutes. Okay.
Yeah. And Amy had another draft of these minutes before we received them, so she was filling in those names. So it was a little preliminary before. So. Okay. If there's no other changes, I'll entertain a motion to approve the minutes as amended.
So moved.
Okay. By Alan and second by Pemba. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Abstain? Okay. Minutes are approved. We're going to committee reports, executive committee, David.
The executive committee did not meet last week. I think Gary and I were the only 2 people actually on campus that day. We had just had the president's address. There really wasn't too much I didn't think to discuss anyway. So there's really nothing new from the executive committee, but I just wanted to say I think the president's address was a huge monster success. I mean, people were just coming in and coming in and coming in. It was awesome. So I was just thrilled with that.
Okay. Staff recognition and awards committee, Tanya?
Nothing to report.
Okay. Communications, David?
I'm going to start my member recruitment. I've got a list of names so far, people I'm going to be contacting to actually start forming my committee now that all our other work is over for now. So that's where I'm at with that.
Okay. Finance committee? Or finance doesn't really have a committee, does it?
It's no,
just a finance report. Board. Yep.
So just waiting for the final figures to come in from the staff presentation, a wonderful event. And that's it for that report. I'll just append, it doesn't appear here, but it would leave the Faculty Senate report. The last meeting on October 13th occurred. There was not a quorum, so nothing was formally approved, but by straw vote, they did approve the climate action plan, and they did approve a request that the faculty get these 20 task force reports that are being done in connection with the RIA and Imagining Cornell before they are in any sort of final form, and that was two straw votes that the faculty took.
So the straw vote on the climate action plan, was it unanimous, right? Was it 40-1, something like that?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who was the dissenter?
I don't know.
I want a name, Alan.
Okay.
No, he's the guy with all the recyclings piled up in his yard.
A note to our agenda and to Amy, can you insert into the agenda?
On there.
Okay, report from the Faculty Senate and then have Alan's comments put there in our minutes rather than under the finance report.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Grants Committee? Gemma. Okay, she didn't say that she has anything to report, so.
Can I just ask a question?
Yep.
Has the emergency grant fund been disposed of?
No, that's. I have to talk to Gemma to see where she's at with that. I know she was talking to Pat to get up to speed on it, but as things stand, we still own that and still have the money, so
okay.
We need to follow up on that and see how we're going to proceed. Personnel policy, Linda and Pemba?
Nothing to report, but I called Linda yesterday and we talked about having a meeting, but we are not sure how to start, how to begin it. Linda and me, we were thinking about talking with Amy about this. But
okay.
Since Linda's not here, so.
Well, I know, you can talk to Amy to help coordinate a room and location, or you can find rooms and locations in your own facilities around campus and then let Amy know, or let the Office of Assemblies know. And a good thing to do, and this is for all committee chairs, is that when you're organizing a meeting that you keep the Office of Assemblies updated on your room and time location. They can post that information on the website. You could even do this yourself, post it on the events calendar at Cornell if you wanted to. And like I said, you can organize the room yourself and just let Amy know so we can get things posted on the website and other places. And then you should also announce your date and time to the whole assembly so any assembly members could attend. And then widely distribute. You know, if this is the first time the Personnel Policy Committee has met in a long time, you probably may need to recruit members. And so if...
Yeah, how many members do you
don't
have? Yeah, I don't... You know, it's...
There's only a couple.
I'm not sure. Mr. Allen, are you in the... You will be in the...
I told Linda I'd help out.
Okay. Okay. Well, between the two of you, when you set a date and time, just let us know or let everybody know, and we'll.
I sent out an email today. So I was to get your email during the day, but I sent an email with the people who had written in that they wanted to be on the committee. So I got my And on the committee emails that are set up, is staff at assembly on those already? Mm-hmm. Or should we CC?
Just because I don't want to CC.
What was the question?
Is, like, each committee has an email list, which includes all the Amazon. I was asking if the staff at assembly email is on there so that they're already copied on everything that goes out.
Learning curve here.
IOC, Tanya?
Just finally got around to sending all of the committee chairs the list of people who wanted mm-hmm. to be on their committees that came in through the ticket system. So once they all vote that those are okay, we'll send those over to Amy and Ari to get them on the website and then the vacancies we still have.
Okay. University benefits, there's nothing to report. Employee education, Seeley?
Okay, I'm new at this. I do have a meeting scheduled for next Wednesday at noon in B16 for an hour with anybody here. I did send out an email. I don't think I did it appropriately, but I did my best. I sent it out to the whole EA list, so everybody should have received some notification of that. And I also emailed all of the members from before, and I don't know whether the ones that you sent on your list is included on mine, but I haven't had a chance to vet them and see. So in the meantime, so the question is, the email list, so every committee has its own email list, so I just need to get that from you, Amy, and what that is.
Okay.
I don't know. Unless it's on the website. It's probably, I'll bet it's on the website.
Ari just did all the committees, so they have
okay.
their own list there.
Okay, so I'll need that, and I guess I need to resend it. And then my question is, you said to notify all the assemblies. Is there a central...
Oh, no, I meant our assembly.
Our assembly.
Yeah.
Okay,
right.
So I did that properly.
Yeah.
Okay. So, so far it looks like I have maybe three or four other people who are interested, which
Ooh.
Is pretty good. So if there is anyone else who'd like to participate, you're welcome. It's, again, education, and it's on next Wednesday at noon in B16?
16,
I think.
Day Hall.
Yeah.
So someone didn't know. What's the mission of the Employee Education Committee?
Well, I think the mission, as it stands now, my understanding, is to become very well-versed in what's offered now. And then improve it, you know, figure out where are the gaps, what might employees need that's not offered. I know at one time, for example, Cornell had a GED program. I don't know if that still exists. So there may be some things that we need to revisit as a group. One of the invitees is the woman, can't think of her name right now, sorry, who's in Human Resources, who's actually oversees the educational program, so hopefully she'll be there to explain.
Maureen,
thank you. She'll come in and help us understand better where the benefit stands now. I think the other piece I'm wondering about is whether or not what kinds of changes, if there's going to be any changes given the university, you know, new priorities, where that stands. Okay, does that answer?
Yes, thank you.
Gary, I think another mm-hmm. piece of that was regarding mm-hmm. tuition at other universities if you're pursuing a degree.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how much Cornell paid, but I heard it's next to nothing. So at one point mm-hmm. that was trying to raise that tuition payment to obtain a degree from
another
institution mm-hmm. of higher education. I mean, I don't know where that is,
right.
but that was a concern at one point.
Could employee education ever be combined with university benefits committee?
Well, the university benefits is not a sole EA committee. It's a cross-campus committee that we don't have explicit control over, and they have been on hiatus for a while, so it's not ours to merge with, I guess you could say.
Who runs it?
Faculty Senate takes the lead on it.
I think you make a good point, because potentially the education
program is a benefit. And
right.
So there may be a connection to the benefits committee, university benefits committee, if that education discussion proceeds actively. And it may kind of bleed over into, and there might be an opportunity to work together.
Mm-hmm.
But I do believe that the education benefit that we see is truly a benefit, so it's in a different category. And the university is very specific about benefits and what's a benefit and what's not a benefit, because it affects everyone. It's, you know, how benefits are administered.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to be cognizant of that. So there might be an opportunity. I think it's good. It sounds like you're headed in the right direction in terms of having the discussion of what's available, how long it's been that way,
mm-hmm.
I think, has
mm-hmm.
been one of the comments,
mm-hmm.
and what are the opportunities.
Anything else?
Celie, I was just thinking, maybe human resources could tell us the number of people who work here who don't have their GED. Just to see if that's actually something that's needed. I mean, are there large amounts of staff members without their GED, or maybe there aren't?
Right.
So.
Yeah, they may. I mean, it's possible that Cornell changed its hiring policy and may not hire people without a high school, and that's fine too.
But if there are,
commenting that was something I knew was a program a long time ago,
yeah.
and it's not now, and so on. Okay. Good thing.
Okay. The ad hoc charter review, Leon?
I have nothing to report, but I don't know if Gary or Jason or...
I think we're meeting Monday.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
So we have something to chew on, and I'm hoping from that we can, because it's been off a little working group, to forward this other thing and see if it's viable or not.
Okay. Any old business? Okay, so we'll go on to new business and the president's suggestion box / cost savings box. Leon?
Yeah, you know, when that came about, we were all, it seems, most were very enthusiastic about it. You know, we would be finding ways to save money, hopefully to save jobs. And so nothing, I just haven't heard anything. Maybe something did come out and I missed it. But I think as a responsible body, I think we should find out what's going on. So, therefore, the other day I sent the email wanting to know, so what are some of those relevant ideas? Have money been saved? Have jobs been saved? What's going on? And then, of course, we do have reimagining Cornell going on. We have the president's announcement that I think everybody saw. What does all this mean? I read in there that three staff members in this unit no longer have jobs. I don't know if they were transferred into other jobs or if they're just out of jobs or what. So I think this is something that we should really take a look at. According to the announcement, there were 8 subcommittees: printing, utilities, grounds, building maintenance, building care, hospitality, catering, transportation, information technology, procurement, and other. So I'm just very interested in the ideas, once again, that are relevant. Are we saving money? Are we saving jobs? So who those folks are that we could invite in to find out what's going on, and maybe we also could come up with some suggestions and ideas to present to further save dollars and jobs. So that's what I was getting at.
So, Peggy, can you address, because the Office of Assemblies is maintaining the box, but it's really,
yes.
It was a president's suggestion box.
So
and
the fact that that's more of an administrative convenience that we have the technology and ARI to set up a suggestion box, and that's why the assembly is part of that. So there's no direct connection to the assembly's vis-a-vis the suggestion box. And there is a committee, and so, and I know Mike Powers is on it within the university communications, and he would probably be a good person to talk to. And if you were interested to hear what's come out of all these suggestions, then perhaps he or another
Do we want to invite him to an upcoming meeting? And
sure. Amy can do that.
Leanne, does that sound good?
Yes, we're good starting point.
Can I make a comment? you know, there was the announcement last week about procurement, $40 million potential savings and through procurement practices. So my understanding is some of that result came through suggestions that have come through the suggestion box as well. So there is some activity around it, and there's a direct relationship to that mailbox. The other thing I feel is important, because I've heard you say it three or four times, Leon, about saving jobs. And I have to be very honest with you, I'm not quite sure that A, that's our job, our role, and B, that's a realistic goal, because people may well be laid off.
It's not our role, but I think we should be aware of what's going on in the area. I'm not saying it's our role. Awareness is our role,
right.
I think.
I don't want to set unrealistic expectations, especially around this table, because you know the reality is that this university will become smaller. The hope is that attrition will help us become smaller in terms of our administrative overhead. But having the scenario where an employee who may be laid off coming to the assembly with the expectation that the assembly can on their behalf go forward and speak or anything. I just want to, and I'm not saying you meant
I'm not
that.
Saying that.
I know. I just want to make sure it's clear to everyone that's not under our purview as an assembly. Leon, I didn't mean to.
That's okay. I'm just saying that if there is any massive layoffs or whatever coming, we should know. That's all I'm saying.
And absolutely. And I think I've heard this group say to Mary and others that if this group can be of assistance or support, they're happy to be there. But I just it kind of hurt my ear when you said same jobs about three times, and I wanted to make sure everyone was under the same
And
thanks.
I'd like to add, to just put it in context, the suggestion box came out over a year ago, back when we first started the, you got to trim your budget off some 5%, that type of thing. Back before we started to really hear about potential layoffs and other things, it was really, we need to start saving some money. Let's ask everybody for ideas. And some of those probably were implemented. I think we should find out. It would be nice to get an update to say, were any of those really acted on and helped start saving? And then the next thing that happened is, as we rolled into more of the budget issues, and then Bain came around, and Bain's doing their thing. They may see some things that are maybe possible suggestions as well. And so it would be good to have somebody come to our Mike come to our meeting and explain how that suggestion box that started way early on in our issues at Cornell, and how it's evolved, and is it still playing a role, or is it a little bit minimized now?
The president had made in his speech there a comment about getting all the suggestions and how useful some of them were. It'd be nice to hear some actual concrete examples of. Even if it's nuts and bolts, simple things like we save X amount because we cut out using Post-its or we cut out printing this, just to hear some concrete numbers as well.
I think Mike's your guy, Mike Powers, and we start there.
What's his committee called?
I can't remember.
Okay.
But I know there was a group charged with reviewing and categorizing all of the feedback that was submitted there, and so. One would logically think that there would be follow-up with that.
It'd be useful as a communication thing to let people know, there's some actual success to be had here in making
kind of a reporting out.
Gary, Amy mentioned that Beth McKinney may be on that committee, because I know we have heard from her a lot about the cost savings. Gary?
So I would suggest that between now and the end of the academic year, we just have Cornell in transition as a standing agenda item for every meeting, and then we can always find someone to come by or ask Mary for data or something, even if it's 5 minutes on an agenda. But I just think that if we have it in our face every month, we'll do something with that, and it won't be sporadic, and that HR and other folks will know that we want to be updated as we go along. So it's just, and I'm just throwing out Cornell in transition as a for whatever placeholder, but something similar to that.
Also, I think it was interesting in the president's announcement, he said one of the things he said was our team will be responsible for the oversight and coordination of information technology across the Ithaca campus. And information technology is one of the subcommittees in the suggestion box. So it would be interesting to see how all this is interplayed into each other. So,
So Leanne, could you...
Unless Jason already knows the information technology thing.
So, Leanne, could you work with Amy then to invite Mike Powers to an upcoming meeting and find out when it fits his schedule to attend and give us an update?
No. Yes, of course I can.
You just want to present all the ideas and then have someone else do the work.
Let the record show.
If you come up with the idea, you have to be willing to step forward and take ownership of your idea and be the leader.
And not to mention the headline of the paper today. Anyway.
Which headline?
The president's speech. The president's announcement yesterday.
Yeah,
the we all got it. So there's things out there that we need to be aware of.
You mentioned in that, and I was struck by that too in his announcement, that they talk about all these positions being shifted and relocated, but there was never any overt mention of who. So did people lose jobs or did they just reorganize? It was very non-transparent, I suppose you could say, or kind of obscure.
We don't know.
Some of the positions are actually vacant positions.
Ones that have never been
filled. Which I think is, if I may, is consistent with, you know, the whole concept of becoming smaller through attrition. And so not filling a position and not, you know, on both the academic, on the provost side and the non-academic side. So I think my understanding and from what I can see was some of those positions were not being filled. The Golden position, he had stepped down, the executive vice president, and the Rich McDaniels position, which is risk management and emergency, he had retired recently, so those are not being filled. That's two examples.
So with Gary's suggestion, Cornell in transition, we would be more aware of what's going on.
Really, yeah, it would keep our eye on the
current.
So we're good on time, so we can kind of say this is open forum now too, and so it's a free for all.
Well, a couple things. First, I think that the president in his address did touch on this a little bit, and he said that it was very useful, and they got some great ideas from all. It's, you know, been pretty successful, but I think what you're looking for
is
more details exactly, which. I totally agree that we should get more details. And the second thing is that the first thing I want to do with my communications committee is get this, like a resolution that basically states that the senior administration can come to us in confidence so that when, before the end of the year, they're going to make their announcements as far as what they're going to implement from the Bain consulting area and how it affects staff, that maybe ahead of time we'll know what's going to happen because we are going to do more jobs. And he said that himself.
He said that himself.
So if we, you know, if I can get that in place beforehand, maybe before these major announcements are made by the end of the year, we might have some information ahead of time that when the announcement is made, we can at least maybe address questions for people, stuff like that. So I'm trying to kind of be on that ball also. And, you know, if we have a resolution that you know, maintains confidentiality until public release of information, you know, hopefully we'll just get more information ahead of time.
No, I don't think we need a resolution for confidentiality.
We had Bain in here the other day.
We were talking, we've been talking for weeks, months now about formally getting a resolution to the president, the senior management, that's setting the stage for future confidential meetings from his office or other executives to meet with the EA, to know that we're prepared to go into that mode to meet with them to get more advanced information. And it kind of was set, I think the tone was kind of set originally by President Skorton when he asked to have a private meeting with the EA where he shared the budget information with us before his weekend trustees meeting. And so we kind of want to say, you know, we'll use that as an example, say we like what you did. We want to now formalize it to make all the senior leadership know that they can engage with us in that same type of model.
So you don't think that's a given?
No. I don't think it's a given at all. I mean, we are so far under their radar. It's unbelievable.
Right.
Despite the very nice intentions that you're our partner, blah, blah, blah. I mean, if you look at this stuff, okay?
Mm-hmm.
This didn't have to be a big EA meeting. This could have been a 5-minute FYI. Just want to let you guys know we're doing this. Here's what it's going to look like. Just, you know, just as a courtesy.
Right.
And that we need to be on their mental checklist. Mm-hmm. If something happens, okay, we need to brief the EA. So it's just we're not there. We're still in a sandbox as far as they're concerned.
Another example would be the data theft. You know, we all learned about it because we got the emails. It would have been nice to have a little heads up confidentially to the EA saying this is about to hit the fan and thousands of employees are going to know. And, you know, the next day when I came into the office, people were asking me because they just assumed, oh, you're the employee assembly, you know, you should know these things. And I was like, I'm sorry, clueless, you know.
Yeah.
And it's kind of embarrassing.
You mentioned something to Mary about that, and she said, we know it never really crossed our minds. Well, that's where we're at. And it's we have to earn their respect. We have to show we're a player. And then we have to verbalize what we want. We can't have guesswork.
We need to gain their confidence that they can come to us ahead of time and be like, look, this isn't going to be released for 2 more days or 2 more weeks, so you need to keep your mouth shut, but this is what's going to happen, just so you know ahead of time, and you're more prepared to answer questions, like in the case of a security breach.
I don't know. It just seems to me that in the past, they've done things like that, where they said, this is confidential, it shouldn't leave this room, X, Y, and Z.
They have, but having you want to make paper... Having an agreement with them on paper, I think, would give them more confidence and maybe more likely to come to us at a time.
Okay, that's fine.
I'm the liaison there, official liaison from the DPSA. So are you suggesting that the EA start having closed door meetings which I shouldn't attend, or other members of staff couldn't attend? How do you have an EA confidentiality agreement when I'm next official who comes from the separate assembly and has to report back to my assembly?
It would probably be an exec meeting anyway, if it was that sort of situation. It's kind of like for, you know,
I mean, I know there's any like
circumstances.
Yeah.
Let's
take your question to. We'll talk about that in an upcoming executive committee meeting because. In the past, we haven't had much liaison participation. So if you are glad to be here, we will talk about how to include our ex officio members, and because we had I'll talk to you after the meeting.
I would suspect that the GPSA would also be interested in sort of a heads up like that and being in the loop and on the mental checklist. I think that a lot of us in the GPSA feel the same way of the administration of the university is making a lot of decisions without us having any voice in the prioritizing or without learning how they're making the decisions, and that's a real source of frustration for the GPSA. And I think if there are opportunities for the GPSA to work with the EA, or, you know, we'd love to partner with you in that kind of prioritizing and getting on the mental checklist and things like that. So if there are ways that we can, if I can liaise in any way, please feel free to take a step.
Well, let's talk more about that, about maybe this the scope of this will expand, and it could be a joint resolution between both. And then when we have those meetings, you know, you would be there, your executive team, too.
Just as far as if you're making promises about confidentiality, let me know what my role is in that.
Okay.
Because I am to report back to the GPSA as well.
Okay. Good.
speaking of liaisons, I see that our student assembly liaison is vacant. Do we don't pick that. They have to appoint somebody.
And sometimes in the past, a student from the ESA have attended past meetings, but
right.
I don't know what's going on now.
So who do we need to just kind of...
The president of the ESA?
Okay.
No,
no.
It's a VP, but I can't remember which one.
Who staffs Keel, that position?
Keel?
Yeah.
One of the assembly leadership.
Okay.
It's not the president, but he...
No, I was just saying, maybe you have to talk to the president. Not that the president would come here.
Well, we'll
that's what
right,
I meant.
We go right to whoever's responsible for staffing to say we would like to staff.
Okay.
That's certainly a reasonable request.
So you're going to, Amy, you'll check in with that assembly and see if they can get somebody appointed? Okay. Speaking of vacancies, because, you know, I made it like this whole sheet filled up with people. I don't see the word vacant anymore. Edit, I guess this is open forum, free for all. Editor of Paw Print, what's the history, or what's the status of where Paw Print might be going? Will a formal editor be a...
I'm currently the editor.
Okay.
And my role is internal communications within the division, so I was asked to step in where Dennis had a role, and so we're doing that, and we continue to publish Paw Print. We still have a board that meets every other week. There is not huge participation. In fact, I'm considering sending out an email to say, is everybody I'm emailing still on this, you know, committee? But it's largely, we have a mailbox, we have people that request us to place articles, we are knowledgeable about what goes on, and we request people to write articles. We are using Cornell Chronicle articles when we feel it's relevant to staff. We actually will have a couple of articles on these administrative changes, because with the Chronicle not printing, it is really one of our only print mediums to try to get out to folks who aren't reading regularly online.
The Chronicle. The Chronicle is never going to be printed again?
Well, there's
is that
a print-on-demand option that's used sporadically.
Okay.
So I guess I'm your...
Okay. I don't remember if I sent you an email or not, but could you or somebody do an article on our three new appointed members, announcing them in a future Paw Print?
That's something we want to help with. That's our communications committee should do that work.
Okay.
Yeah, we don't have the Dennis writer anymore, and so what we do is pass the resources. So that would be, yes, if you can submit a little small article and little bio for each new member, that'd be terrific.
Yeah, and usually we have a photo, so I don't know if we coordinate with university photography to have the three.
We can help with that.
Okay.
And we will pay for that.
So we'll be too late for this issue, but what would be a good deadline for these guys to get
it? A week tomorrow is our next deadline. It would be great to have copies.
Well spoken, like the grizzled she's in there drinking and smoking.
So I may be, have data for you tomorrow, because I think your meeting tomorrow is one of the first in a while.
No, we've
that
been meeting.
Overlap with the meeting. So I can possibly.
We actually publish tomorrow, so we're putting that paper to bed.
Right.
So it would be for the next edition, which will be in 2 weeks.
Right.
So our copy deadline's today. I got the lingo here.
That's great.
our copy deadline is a week before our print deadline. So next Wednesday, we would be great to have a copy that gives us a week to get it in order to the printer. So gives us 3 working days.
Okay.
I'm curious, Peg, are you going to publish the results of your content survey? Or is that just for internal?
I'm just
curious how, you know, just I'm interested in the communication committee, and I'm just interested in how I'm communicating with
staff. You know, I don't know how much work it would be to be, but it's interesting. I think perhaps sharing it and attending a communications meeting and sharing that with the communications group is an excellent idea.
I'm just wondering how that's working as a vehicle.
We actually found out some stuff. I can't remember it off the top of my head. I'd be happy to do that. It was quite a long document to produce, and so I have resisted printing multiple copies. And I just lent it out to a person that's going to be joining my area, Donna Goss, some of you may know, is actually moving over from the facilities area to university communications in the next couple of weeks. And she will actually be working quite closely on Paul French Film.
Oh.
She's historically an active member of UA or has been in the past. So.
And the EA.
Or EA.
And the EA.
I
meant
EA.
Been a chair.
I hate mixed up some. But, if you want to put us on your agenda, we'd be happy to come and talk and share with you what we learned from that service.
Awesome.
Appreciate your interest.
Anything else, or we forgot about going around the room of the 15 seconds of what's happening in your life. So maybe we can just quickly do that, and then we can wrap this meeting up. So I can say let's do our 15 seconds of fame and or any announcements you have. So, Steely, take it away.
Let's see. I spent Monday afternoon in the under traffic court for a misdemeanor driving with a suspended license unbeknownst to me. So I just want to tell you that it turned out it was not my fault.
DUI.
There was DMV.
DUI.
Got to have a stamp from 2006. Everybody check your licenses with DMV and double check that DMV is having a lot of problems with their information. Fortunately, I was able to show them that it was not something which was out of my control. But it's not fun sitting in a courtroom, especially in a little tiny little community. It's quite
scary. Just remember, all confessions are still being recorded.
We have a confidentiality
agreement. Down at DMV, just have them run your license and make sure it's still active in their system.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Alan.
Well, nothing that dramatic. Back from L.A., why I missed the staff assembly. We had an overnight flight that got delayed from our daughter's partner's twins baby shower. Big event in Southern California. Me, I'm having lots of fun in my new position, negotiating contracts with the university, with the police union, the communication workers in New York City. We finished up the UAW one some time ago, and many more to come. So that's what my life is like now.
Where are you physically located?
I'm now in the Sizer building on Pine Tree Road near East Hill Plaza.
Right. No parking problem.
No parking problem.
And
you got all
the new building?
Shuttle is good.
It's an old building.
Oh, it's not old building.
Is it an artificial breeder?
Leon passes.
I'll beat Tommy and Leslie with the opening tonight of Nice People Dancing to Good Country Music at the Schwartz Center for the Performing Arts, a whimsical, charming comedy set in Texas with an actual truck on stage.
I think it's highlighted on the event. Can we get it up?
Yeah.
It'll be important.
I have an announcement at my workplace. We have a new station open called American Masala. It's actually an Indian meal, but it's a mixture of Indian and American food, so it's a good thing to try. It was open actually a month ago, and
Good. Yeah,
it's time to bring it in. That's okay. They worked out for you. I got nothing. Let's pleasantly uninventful.
Lovely.
Very busy at the Sports Center right now. So, Tanya and I are working with David Harris to do something with United Way in conjunction with our production of It's a Wonderful Life, a live radio show. It's going to be a really fun holiday presentation we're doing in December, and we have a lot of community outreach with that going on. We have school groups coming in and singing, we have businesses involved.
And for one of the performances, for every ticket that we sell, we're going to donate 2 cents in any way. That came out of the team.
New with me, I finally closed on my house and moved in. It's been the longest struggle of my life. But if anybody is in need of a house, I have one for sale. And if somebody takes my hand.
An extra house.
I have an extra house there. And for nice people that have country music, this Sunday, if anybody's interested in going, we're doing buy one, get one free tickets. For some reason, nobody wants to come on for the AMA. So.
David?
I'm just kind of excited that all our presidential addresses are over so we can kind of get down to business and form our committees and start moving forward with some of the things we really wanted to do this year that we talked about months ago. So, I'm pretty excited about that. But I didn't enjoy the addresses.
Things, home life is still pretty busy. I'm glad. I think today I can declare that my cough is on the way out. So I'm so excited about that. And I've been doing election machine testing for the past couple of nights. That's kind of interesting. So this coming election, November 3rd, may be the final election of the lever machines. But if you live in the city of Ithaca, they're going to be all electronic. The city of Ithaca has chosen, or was kind of a pilot, because they don't have any potential contested races. So,
no harm, no foul.
And I mean, which means there's probably going to be extremely low voter turnout anyway. But you know, the new machines are interesting.
What about voter fraud?
Won't matter. There's only one candidate.
Well, and, you know, I don't. I feel good. As a computer guy, I don't feel so bad about the system, because there are still paper ballots made, and that the whole system can be audited by hand, counted by hand afterwards.
Like or a receipt in effect.
Yeah, you get a receipt and a tabulator, but they can all be cross counted. Yeah, so that's kind of exciting. That's it.
I'll pass this time.
Okay.
I'm really lucky in my job. I get to do a lot of cool things. So one of the things that's going on in the second year of producing a weekly radio show on issues related to race and class and equity that's on every Tuesday morning. But it was great that Dee Matthews was here, because for several years I've been working to try to get Martha Van Rensselaer in the National Women's Hall of Fame. And so we're getting pretty close to seeing that happen. So her story is very compelling. And I did a documentary on it last year, and it was with the dean, and it was a lot of fun. So I feel very lucky, despite the turmoil.
Entertain a motion to adjourn.
So moved.
Thank you. We are adjourned. 1:32 p.m. Thank you very much.
Nicely done, Jay.
Thank you.
This has been a production of Cornell University. On the web at cornell.edu.